Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Coming up on DTNS, GM takes on Tesla with new electric vehicle battery tech. Twitter joins the ephemeral messaging trend. Is it still a trend at this point? Also, what makes a good coder? Spoiler, they map. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, March 4th, 2020 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Redwood, I'm Sarah Lane.
In Salt Lake City, I'm Scott Johnson.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
We were just talking about not touching your face and the heroic diary of Elizabeth Lepato at The Verge. That was all on Good Day Internet. If you want to get that conversation and more, you got to become a patron at patreon.com/DTNS. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Hulu's live TV service is now available on Sony's PlayStation, joining YouTube TV as options to replace the now closed PlayStation View streaming TV service. Hulu's existing PlayStation app will be updated to give access to live TV features.
In other news, Amazon Studios joined Twitter and Facebook in canceling plans to attend South by Southwest conference in Austin, Texas, starting March 13th. Amazon had planned 2 screenings, some panels, and a marketing event.
I cannot tell you how itchy my face is right now. Microsoft is offering free 6-month trials to the premium version of Microsoft Teams. The premium version has more calling and meeting features than the free version. But Microsoft is also updating the free version of Teams to let users schedule meetings for video calling starting March 10th. This is all to help people who have to work remotely because of COVID-19 concerns.
Tesla has been using an older, slower processor for its autopilot functions for cars made in China since January 7th because of a lack of chip supply. Yes, the ripples are felt by many. Tesla says it will upgrade the chip free of charge when supplies become available. The newer chips prices images 21 times faster than the previous generation.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about this trend that Twitter is on.
Well, Twitter is feeling quite on fleet today. They announced they will test a new sharing format called Fleets. This is starting in Brazil, so we're going to see that happen first. Fleets cannot receive likes, public replies, or retweets, and disappear after 24 hours. If it sounds a lot like a story, well, you wouldn't be crazy. Fleets show up in a rounded profile icon at the top of the timeline from people who follow each other. Fleets do not show up in search or moments and cannot be embedded on external websites.
First of all, fleets is just a great word.
I mean, it's fleeting.
Because it's a fleeting tweet. Get it?
Yeah. It also
I was thrilled when I saw this morning. Yeah, that too. This is interesting because Twitter, the one thing about Twitter that has never worked for me is if I am involved in watching some live event and there's, I don't know, like maybe 10 other people who are going to understand what I'm talking about, or whoever happens to be on Twitter right that moment. And we're all doing the same thing. You know, like maybe if I'm watching the Super Bowl and my team is about to lose and I write like, no, and there's no context or anything. Well, I always, without fail, a few days later, we'll get someone being like, are you okay? Like, sometimes you're like, look at the timestamp, like whatever it was is over now. But this would be really good for moments like that. The one thing about it is Twitter seems to be making pretty limiting so that there's no conversation to be had. Whatever I'm saying is not only ephemeral, but kind of thrown out into the ether without any context.
You can respond by DM. That's it. But then that gets shuttled over into DMs. That's not a conversation that's part of the general fleet ecosystem, the Fleeco system.
It also assumes that you have your DMs on, which I assume they're going to have some sort of reminder to tell people if they get replies, they're not going to be able to get.
These are people who follow each other.
Oh.
So you tend to have DM.
Technically, that's true. Yeah, you can lock them out, but technically that's true. The one thing we haven't said at all is that the term will be Twitter fleets, which is a weird thing to say out loud. I don't know if I'm going to call them that. Twitter fleets. Like, what are you doing? Oh, well, go check out my Twitter fleets. Because if you just say, go check out my fleets, it's going to take a while until anybody knows what the crap you're talking about.
And this is the first new way of communicating on Twitter since the DM. Right. They've taken tweets and made different things out of them, like moments and trending topics,
conversations,
and stuff. But those are still just tweets. These are pieces of communication that will not show up in your timeline. They're accessed in a different way. They don't show up in any timeline. You have to go up and click on a thing to say, I want to see that fleet from Scott or Sarah, which is a whole different way of experiencing Twitter. People are used to the sort of the river of Twitter things just kind of hitting their timeline. So this is an interesting idea, but I'm not sure if it actually solves the problem for Twitter, because I think people just end up not using it. But I guess that's why they're testing it in Brazil, just to find out.
Well, if you only have, let's say I follow 200 people, they have to follow me back for me to see theirs and for them to see mine. You suddenly have just whittled the whole thing down to an audience of 200. I don't know if that's, well, that's interesting.
The idea is this is your friends. This is like, yeah, I just want to tell my friends, the people I actually follow. But then that's also not how Twitter works, because so many people game the system by automatically following back anybody who follows them, right?
Right, right. So all that stuff gets real messy. Plus, the whole idea of stories on other apps has always been, this is another way to reach the people following me, and there's no caveat that I have to follow them back. I think this might be a goof, because if somebody, Patton Oswalt wants to do something funny on a fleet, that would probably be cool for all of us fans of his that follow him to see it. Instead, he's got to follow us for it to matter. And I don't know that it ever will. So why would him and a bunch of his comedian friends just talk to each other?
Just like if you're a regular user, I think you get 2 minutes of video on a fleet. But especially approved people can get 10 minutes. I bet some people's fleets will be able to be broadly available without having to have follow backs.
Yeah, I think it'll probably become a setting that the user can choose. I also feel like, okay, this isn't exactly the same thing as a DM, but let's say the scenario that you described, Scott. What if I really did want to reach those 200 people? Not everybody following me, but, you know, people that I consider a little bit closer to. Well, I don't want to DM them all separately. I don't want to put them all on a big old group DM. So this is a way to sort of half blast out something that
that's a good way to
doesn't really need to be there the next day.
They still needed to hurry up and do it in 24 hours. But yeah, that's an interesting way.
I would do it for, let's say, announcing our live stream. But I won't, because it's only going to go in the fleet section.
Right.
So there you go.
Yep.
General Motors announced a new battery called Ultium that uses pouch-style cells instead of cylindrical cells. And that means they can be stacked vertically or horizontally. So you get a little more versatility in how you design the car around this electric vehicle battery. The Ultium's 50 to 200 kilowatt hour range can get up to 400 miles on a charge, depending on how it's configured. GM added aluminum to reduce the cobalt content by 70%. That helps bring down the cost. Ultium's cost should be below $100 per kilowatt hour, so vehicles that use Ultium potentially would be more affordable. GM plans to have 20 electric nameplates. They're not models anymore. They're nameplates, because whatever. But they're going to have 20 of those by 2023, with the first three coming in the next few months. Its plant, GM's plant in Hamtramck, Michigan, will be retrofitted to produce autonomous and electric vehicles, and battery cells will be made at a factory run by a joint venture of General Motors and LG Chem in Lordstown, Ohio. So the batteries made in Lordstown, shipped up to Hamtramck, put in the vehicle, and then they roll off the assembly line.
Silly name aside, I think Ultium sounds like...
There's nothing wrong with Hamtramck. Oh, you meant Ultium, sorry.
No, Hamtramck, you guys are awesome. Don't go changing. But I always wondered if big battery advancement would finally come from what we're doing with automobiles with batteries. And I'm not saying that this immediately translates to batteries in general or storage in general.
Yeah, it may not. Right.
Yeah, but I like to hear when there's battery innovation, because you hear this all the time. Batteries haven't budged for 20 years. They haven't moved. We've just gotten smarter devices that know how to take advantage of them. Well, maybe in cars, because we have a very mission critical, mission happening here, we can finally see some real innovation. So great.
Yeah, and cobalt mining is problematic, price aside. So all of this sounds great. I'd love to see this in more cars if it ends up being the way of the future.
Well, you're going to get 20 nameplates by 2023. And GM will probably sell these batteries to other automakers. They're already in partnership with Honda on one of their EVs, so I'm sure it'll go in there.
A feature Google showed at, I'm still laughing at nameplate. A feature Google showed at CES back in January that reads web pages aloud is rolling out worldwide to Android users. Users tell Google Assistant to read it or read this page, and then the page will be read aloud and highlight words as they are read if you want to follow along. You can tap the screen to move to a particular section if you like. You can also adjust the speed of the reading to be slower or faster, kind of how you do with a podcast, if you like it to drawl out a little bit more or be a little bit snappier. The feature also translates between 42 languages. So this is pretty cool, pretty nifty for a lot of folks. I don't know. When I looked at the way that it worked in a video that Google had shared with the world, I was like, it's still kind of robotic, but Google Assistant's voice is one of the least annoying of all assistants to me. It's not that bad, and you could probably get used to it. And I love the idea of maybe for the show. I mean, I don't have an Android device, so I can't use it yet. But for the show, if I can't sit in front of my computer, but I really need to read this story about GM's new batteries, I could have it read to me. So that I see it coming in handy, even if it's not an accessibility feature, which, of course, there's that too.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, and the more I think about it, the features that matter to me the most here are the speed settings, as weird as that sounds. There's a lot of things that will read stuff to me now, either manually or other apps or otherwise. So none of that sounds hugely innovative. The innovation here will be kind of devil in the details stuff, like adjusting that speed. I know people who would love to have this speed reading to them in a car, and I know others who would much rather have that slow way down. And sort of everything in between, forgetting about, you know, great accessibility leaps forward with this. So I'm into it. And I do like that voice. I also hope there's other voice options. That'd be cool just to shake things up.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a feature of Google Assistant. We can have all kinds of wishes about what Google Assistant could become, and that'll be part of it. But yeah, I think this is a nifty thing.
All right, well, let's take a look at the Foldit puzzle game. Talked about this on TMS briefly this morning. This crowdsources research into protein folding in a game format and has added the COVID-19 virus, or coronavirus as it's mostly known as. And it's a related puzzle to that. The hope is to develop a protein that binds to COVID-19 to block interaction with human cells and halt infection. Human players are often better than computers at finding certain solutions, good at recognizing patterns, that sort of thing. However, the Folding at Home project is also researching the virus. Folding at Home uses spare computer cycles to power a computer model. People have certainly heard of that before, but I went and downloaded this today. I haven't played it yet, but there is a Mac, a PC, and a Linux version people can download and try.
Yeah, so the idea is there's a spike on the COVID-19 virus that it uses to bond to human cells. And that's how it's able to inject its genetic code and replicate. And that's how viruses infect you, right? They just keep replicating and replicating and replicating. So if they can create a protein that would sort of lock on to that spike and stop it from being able to connect to anything, that would stop the virus from replicating. And that would be a very effective treatment. This is an attempt to figure out what protein might be worth trying to block that. And if you're like, well, why can't you just look at it and figure out how to fold it around it? It's not that simple when you're talking about how proteins fold. Hence, the projects, both the Foldit puzzle game and Folding at Home, are more than 10 years old. They've been trying to find different kinds of proteins for lots of different diseases through this. Folding at Home uses a brute force method of just saying, let's use the extra cycles on your computer to power an algorithm that'll just try every possible combination it can do. And then Foldit is saying, yeah, but sometimes humans are intuitive and they can just make logical jumps that computers can't. And so that might get us to something faster. But if we pitch it as a puzzle game, then people are more likely to want to take part and try this out. So either one of these or both is a great way to help contribute to a potential cure to the coronavirus.
Well, I think we should all, as well as not touching our faces, be playing these games. Get to the puzzle, everybody. Let's find a solution. Humans unite.
Right when you said it, right when you said that, I went like this, like an idiot. I don't know why I didn't notice, and now I'm doing it again.
It's the reverse psychology, I don't know, of some kind. But
wash your hands. This is, don't touch your face. Play fold it.
Fold it. There you go.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Yeah, it's all kidding aside, it's pretty amazing that the humans en masse could actually be the solution that we're looking for. It just takes more and more of human interaction for it to be stronger. That's super cool.
It's not guaranteed, right? But it's worth trying, and you'll have a fun puzzle game, if nothing else. India's Supreme Court has sided with cryptocurrency exchanges that were banned in April 2018 by India's central bank that barred banks from offering services that supported digital currency. So they didn't outlaw the digital currencies. They said that they can regulate banks, and therefore they're going to tell banks they can't support digital currencies, which basically undermine digital currencies in India. The court struck down the RBI's curbs, which would let virtual currency investors and businesses in India push against stricter rules being planned by the government and participate in projects, maybe if Libra ever happens, something like that. The Supreme Court is separately hearing another case which will decide on regulations for digital currencies itself. The Indian Central Bank has been exploring creating a sovereign bank digital currency of its own and said private coins like Bitcoin increase the potential for money laundering and other illegal activities. Basically, the court said that, yes, the central bank can regulate banks, but it can't stop them from doing this, that it needed to have a better reason for stopping banks from supporting digital currencies than just the fact that they're digital currencies. So it's not impossible that the RBI comes up with a better reason and is able to put this back in place and get it tested by the court. But for now, it means that cryptocurrency exchanges have got a second wind. I don't think India is going to give up on this, though, because anti-laundering, anti-fraud is a huge priority and a huge effort of the Modi government. So I would expect them to try another way to at least curb this, if not bring it down, besides just the regulations that are also being disputed in court as well.
Well, I get being super nervous about, not super nervous, that's a bad way to describe how government feels about banking regulation, but I understand the worries that they might have about corruption or this not working right or whatever. But this does seem like a step in the right direction. If you think that cryptocurrency is a part of our banking future and you want worldwide banks to be able to play in that playground.
And considering the size of India and it's,
yeah, like it's a big deal, right? So it's hard to say whether this is truly a step forward or just a temporary stopgap until it's set back again. I don't know, but I hope, I don't know. It feels like the future. Like, even though I barely understand it and Tom explains it every 10 days and then I try to understand it better and all that, I still, something in me knows that blockchain and cryptocurrency and everything around all this stuff is the future. So get on board, India.
Yeah. Hey, folks. I think what this does is it takes an overcorrection and brings it back toward the center, and we'll see if it swings the other way or keeps, banging around in the middle. To get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to DailyTechHeadlines.com.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Chantel Pratt, an associate professor of psychology at the University of Washington, is the lead author on a study published in Nature's Scientific Reports looking at what is a quality that helps people to learn programming languages fast. They looked at 36 adults who, as part of this study, agreed to learn Python. During the learning process, while they were learning to program with Python, they were tested for things like problem solving, memory, language skills, numerical skills, resting state brain activity, et cetera, et cetera, to kind of assess what are these people's natural talents and how do those correlate to how well they're doing at learning the programming? Because some, as with everything, some people learn faster than others. The study found, and again, this is 36 adults right now, so this is a pilot study. There needs to be like wider studies done on this, but you do this kind of study to find out if it's worth doing those bigger studies. And this one found that the participants who learned Python the fastest had strong language, working memory, and reasoning abilities. They didn't have strong math skills. In fact, having a stronger math skill barely correlated. So it was your language skills, your memory, working memory particularly, and your ability to reason that correlated with being able to learn the programming language fast. Math, engineering types of skills that aren't related to reasoning were not important in how well you were able to program Python. So they're concluding that it seems like learning a programming language may be more like learning an actual spoken language, like Korean or Spanish, than it is like learning math. And that the idea that we're putting development, coding, and programming in the math sciences department may be doing a lot of people who would be great programmers a disservice because, well, I'm crappy at calculus. I guess I'll never be a coder. Doesn't appear to be true.
And so many of computer science degrees are set up with a very strong math foundation. I mean, I was a math major briefly. I like math. I've always found math fun, but it was something where I was under the understanding that I would have to go really far in math if I wanted to, you know, get into a CS type of field. And I just ended up going in a different direction. But I know so many other people who are like, oh, I would just be completely, priced out of something like this because I'm not so good with numbers. And it turns out that the more programming languages have evolved over the years, the more they are language-based rather than just being able to, you know, think of everything in terms of numbers, which is a good thing. Doesn't mean you don't still need math skills. But I love the idea that it's a lot like learning a foreign language because that's what it is. Mm. It's a foreign language that you won't necessarily just be good at it if you're bilingual already, but it's something where it's like, I want to figure out how to convey this thought. How do I do it? And that makes a lot of sense to me.
Today, even more so, it's more of a language and less of a math language. The languages are object oriented. They don't have the same kind of reliance on one's math skills that they may have used to had. And so I can speak from my own experience. There was a time where I was heavily involved in making PHP web pages. What interested me was not the math. It's never been my strong suit. Always hated math. And when I had to use it, I would. But what really stuck with me and what really made it a great fun endeavor for me was the communication side of it. Of if I do this, then this happens. If somebody enters this, then look at all the cool things that can happen as a result when they hit that submit key. Like, to me, that was magic. I felt like I was like working in a, I don't know, like a whole new medium that was different than math. It was different than even just communication. It was a way to like bring data from one place to another because someone made, did something. And what I'm saying is probably very rudimentary to most programmers and where what got them into it when they were 10 or 11 years old. But even as an adult, that really appealed to me. And I think that this has actually helped kind of confirm for me what I was jiving on was this feeling of, well, this isn't just math. This isn't just algebra. This is, it's some of those things and I need to buff up on those things. And that's great. And it never hurts. But really what is, this is about execution. It's about planning. It's about result. What result do I want? And therefore what underpinnings need to exist for the result to happen? That's very different than just, you know, knowing the end of an equation.
Yeah. A lot of people have been saying logic in the Twitch chat while we're doing this show. And it's not exactly logic, depending on what you mean by it. Logic is sort of a loosely used term. But logic in the mathematical sense doesn't seem to be what they're talking about. If by logic you don't really mean logic, but you mean reasoning, then yeah, just being able to problem solve and sort of intuitively understand, like, well, if this is true and this is true, then this is probably also true. That seems to be part of this. I'll tell you, man, when I was in college, I was a very mixed up person. But, you know, I did great at linear algebra. I hated business calculus. Later, I found out that's because I took business calculus and not just calculus. And I was all turned around. But I thought, well, if I want to do computer science, I have to do those classes. And I don't want to keep doing those classes. And I loved journalism and I loved language. So I look at this like a lot of other people in our chat and y'all and say, well, shoot, if the standards had been you need to be good at reasoning, working memory and language, I probably would have like dived right in and done whatever math. I don't think we're saying you don't need any math. We're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. But I would have done the math that I needed to do to understand the programming languages without worrying like, oh, I have to be really, really good at it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that's I think I would have done more of that in college. And I would have been less like, no, I'm an artist type. I can't do that. And they shouldn't come over here either. Stay in your lane, guys. Like, I would have looked at it very differently. It was a weird assumption back then.
But and there's also, you know, there's the obvious gender gap with coders and engineers. And it doesn't mean, oh, well, that's because men are better at math than women. And that's why they're all coders now. But I think that there was sort of this assumption that, well, it's so male dominated because that's just sort of the way that it's set up. It's a little bit more intimidating. And this kind of study makes me hope that it would be less intimidating because it opens up a lot more skill sets of people who are like, oh, yeah, that sounds exactly like me. This sounds fun.
Yeah. And, you know, Stoic Squirrel pointed out, you don't really need a degree to become a coder anymore. So there is, you know, an escape valve here where if you've been thinking, gosh, programming sounds fun, but it's probably got a lot of math. You just go get a Udemy course or something like that and start programming. There's no reason to wait around, which is one of the beauties of sort of the advancement in technology and the internet has made available. But you should, even then, even if you're not going to go the college route, you should know like, oh, it's these kinds of skills that might make programming easier for you to learn than you thought. Again, this is only 36 adults. There needs to be a wider study. But it does kind of make some sense.
Mm-hmm. I wish I was part of the study. It sounds like just a cool study.
Maybe you could be part of the
like,
next.
Be like, explore my mind. Tell me if I'm good at coding.
Yeah.
thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You could submit stories and vote on others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. You can also join the conversation in our Discord, which you can join by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS. All right, let's check in. What's the latest on text message this week where Nate Langson is tackling food and royalty?
Hey, let me ask you all a question. Would you eat food you ordered from someone on Facebook Marketplace? Even if you didn't know them, it's been happening a lot in the UK, and our equivalent of the US FDA is getting involved. Also, in England, we have a lot of prehistoric buildings and castles and relics of villages built hundreds of years ago, and metal detectors have got so affordable and good that archaeologists are worried that people who buy them don't realize that if they find treasure, it belongs to the Queen. You can learn more about Facebook food and what the Queen doesn't want you digging up on text message at uktechshow.com.
They talked about an ad on Facebook for a single onion 2 kilometers away from Nate.
Like, wow.
Wow.
I guess that if you live next door, right? Not everybody's 2 kilometers away. If you live next door and you needed an onion real bad, but you'd go to Facebook to find that? I don't know. I don't know if that's the way the world works. But yes, any treasure you find belongs to the Queen, as it should.
All right, let's check out the mailbag. Nick writes in about our conversation about Apple maybe going mini LED. Nick says, I'm actually excited to see reports that Apple is going to go down the mini LED route with their coming products, according to Ming-Chi Kuo. I have zero Apple hardware in my life, but I have a super high-end PC. The highest-end gaming PC monitors are getting new revisions later this year with mini LED backlights, and the new backlight is expected to add a large amount to the price of these new revisions. With Apple ordering mini LED backlights from suppliers first, that will hopefully mean the orders would be high enough to bring down mini LED prices in general. Right now, there's a premium charged for mini LED, and anything that brings down the price is nothing but good news to me, as these displays are amazing to gaze upon.
That's a cool way of looking at this, Nick, which is like, you know, I'm not going to buy an Apple product, but man, if they start making the price of mini LEDs scale high enough that it brings down prices for other people, that could be cool. I love that.
Yeah, we should all get stoked when we hear Samsung's going to do a thing.
Yeah, and
worldwide, because then it makes Apple fans, they should go, oh, well, that means that stuff's going to come down. Maybe we'll see something similar, or it'll be cheaper when it hits. Same thing goes the other way. Like, this is the reason why this particular part of technology competition is good. And I say, you know, hooray for that. I'm all ready for Mini Pixel. Let's go.
Shout out to patrons at our Master and Grandmaster levels, including Steve Iadarola, Mark Gibson, and Dr. Carmine M. Bailey. Scott Johnson, I hope you haven't been touching your face.
Just once.
But even if you have, what else has been going on over the last week?
Well, when I'm not trying to not touch my face, I'm busy making content. And you can find all of it over at frogpants.com. If comics are your liking, there's a bunch of links there. If you'd rather listen to a bunch of podcasts that have been around forever, you can listen to those. Lots of projects, lots of cool stuff, always available at your fingertips at frogpants.com. And for everything else, you can poke me on Twitter. And maybe you'll see my fleets when they happen over at twitter.com/ScottJohnson.
I can't wait to make my first fleet. Maybe I'll travel to Brazil just so I can do it. Hey, you know what day it is?
What?
It's 3 months since we started the counter on people getting a sticker, poster, mug, or t-shirt with the special 6-year anniversary DTNS logo on it.
Oh.
I just got the email from Patreon that the first batch is headed to the factory to get printed and mailed out to 174 patrons who are at the right level, kept their pledge for 3 months, and will be getting their stuff. You can join them, folks. Get some cool stuff and insider perks on top of it. All the details are at patreon.com/DTNS/merch.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. You got something to say, something on your mind? We'd love to hear it. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.